It's bonus pod 252.
You enter the clinic. You close the door behind you. It says Dr. Famous on it. Practitioner in medicine and spells. You hang your head in shame. You shake your head, but you say to yourself, I've tried everything else. And you walk down the corridor, and you go to the receptionist, and you say, I'm here to see Dr. Famous. And the receptionist has big, wacky hair. And she goes, blubba-da-boo! Good to see you! Come to see Dr. Famous, have you thee? Well, sit down and fill out a form, said he. And you go, said he? What? So you want me to fill out a form? Is that something someone said? And she just hands you a form. And you take it and you go over to sit down. And you fill in your name, Podbud. And you have your date of birth and your address and your email. And this is when you start looking around you. And there's people with problems here you've never seen in your life. There's a guy whose head is on upside down. There's a lady with her dog. But she's got dog paws and the dog has lady hands. You look over at a baby. But this baby's really tall and has a six-pack. And you're like, oh. And you keep looking around. And there's a big purple bird that's reading a newspaper. And it catches you staring at it. And it goes, what are you looking at? And you're like, oh. And you return to your form. And then the next box to fill out is, what ails you? Question mark. And you start writing, I just don't feel like anything matters anymore. No matter what I do, I can't seem to find purpose in life. My friends, my family, they are unable to get to me. Nothing feels like it has any value. I don't know what I'm doing here. And then someone grabs the form out of your hand and you look up. And it's a doctor. He's wearing a white lab coat and he's got half moon glasses and he's got a bald head but hair around the side. And he looks down your form and he goes, come with me. And you get up and you follow him into the corridor and you say, sorry, weren't all these people waiting before me? And the doctor says, what is troubling you is far more serious than anything they have. And you go, really? One of those, the head is upside down. But he doesn't hear you. And you follow him into his clinic and he closes the door and he sits you down and he grabs you by the chin and he goes, in all my days of medicine and spells, I have never seen someone so bereft as you, someone so in need of help as you are. And you go, really? And he goes, yeah. And just as he says that, he goes, but let Dr. Famous show you the way. And he sweeps backwards and his arm extends. And behind him, instead of a wall, he reveals a beautiful tropical jungle. And you go, what? And you look around and it's just tropical forest everywhere. Parrots are flying around. The air, the sky is blue and clear. And you look down and you realize you're flying. You're flying through the air. A dragon flies across your vision and it gives you a wink and he says, everything is going to be okay, Podbud. The air fills with your favorite music, Electro Swing. And the stars, you look up and the stars start to swirl around and they create a whole new constellation. That is your face. And the face smiles and winks at you. And Dr. Famous is flying next to you and he points around and he says, see how beautiful the world truly is? Are you sure you can find no more value in life? Are you sure? And you say, maybe you're right, Dr. Famous. Maybe your spell has worked. Maybe there is something to life. And Dr. Famous looks at you and says, I'm glad that's finally clear. 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 And you wake up and you've been defibrillated. And there's paramedics all around you. And And they're like, oh, God damn it, we're too late again. Dr. Famous got away. And you were drugged heavily. The form you were handed was covered in LSD. And but then you think about it for a bit and you go, you know what, paramedic, I think I'm going to be okay. And the paramedic says, I didn't ask you anything. This is terrible. He's killed so many people. Welcome to Bonus Pod.
High quality, a better narrative structure than a lot of what's on Netflix.
Oh, thanks, man.
Two things I really like. I mean, you gave us the reason why, but I really like the fact that you still have to fill in a form even when it's Dr. Famous's magic clinic.
Oh, yeah, he should know. Surely he should know. But that should have been like, the first bit of warning that you were dealing with a charlatan.
Well, also, I like it because it's like, even with magic, you can't escape the drudgery of admin. Like, it's just forever.
Yes.
And then I really like the phrase. Well, first of all, I really like the podbud saying, you know what, paramedic? I think that's really funny. And I also really like someone saying to someone, I didn't ask you anything. This is terrible. It's so funny to completely reject the opinion and testimony of the affected victim in that scenario. I didn't ask you anything. This is terrible.
Yeah, treating their experience as just a very small part of a greater evil.
Exactly. Who cares what you think? Yeah, exactly. Dr. Famous got away. Which is another really funny sentence. Dr. Famous got away.
Dr. Famous got away. Again.
Again, yeah. The idea that it's this hunt where it's like it's so hard to find him even though he repeatedly sets up physical clinics. Which is like what we talked about with the movie Saw all over again. It shouldn't be hard to find.
Yeah, he's a guy ordering like $5,000 worth of plywood and
to an officially empty building.
That suddenly has a huge electricity bill and a lot of heat emanating from it and noise.
Yeah, if anything, like the first time the police discover the Saw warehouse, it would be because they think it's a fucking weed farm. Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. Have you ever done any sort of Dr. Famous or voodoo or spells or palm reading?
Palm reading. My aunt in Malaysia always palm read. Said she could palm read and would read all of us and the cousins' palms. And so I can't remember much of it. There's some significance to. So that line above, you know how if you look at your right palm, there's a sort of number 7 in the crease,
yeah,
right?
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, that 7 sort of bit. And there's a line above that sort of starts on the outside of your hand and moves inwards.
Yeah.
And apparently, so mine stops sort of in the middle of the palm. But if that continues up into the finger and through your two fingers, that means that you waste money. That's the money sort of flowing out of your hand. So if it doesn't do that, then you can save money. There's something some significance about whether the other two lines meet or not in that sort of corner on the side of your hand, side of your palm. I can't remember too much significance about it. But we did a bit of that. There's generally a lot of superstition in Malaysia, ghosts and demons and things and luck.
Yes.
There's a lot of luck. But yeah, it wasn't an everyday element of life, I wouldn't say.
No, it's a sort of intermittent or special occasions thing.
Yes, exactly. Spirit days. Because I think we have the Chinese equivalent of All Souls Day is, I think, Chap Go Mei, I think. Yeah. The end of the Chinese New Year period, where you go and pay respects to your ancestors' graves. I think that is sort of the ghost day. I think that's the day, our Day of the Dead.
Oh, cool! Yes.
Yeah. I might be wrong about that, but it's funny. Every culture, well, not every. I don't know every, but a lot of cultures have this Day of the Dead idea, where sort of the dead return to Earth for one day.
Yeah, it does. It is always for like a short period. It's never for like, then the dead return for 7 weeks. Long enough that you wouldn't want someone staying with you, you know?
You're like, a month? The ghosts are back for a month? That seems like a long time.
Oh, it's been a long ghost month.
Oh. Can you imagine? It's like The Purge, but for a month and with ghosts.
Or just people being like, like January, people will complain about January. Just being like, oh God, it feels like we're not even halfway through ghost month.
Oh, a long ghost month this year.
We've finally broken the back of ghost month. This is the last thing we need.
People try and do dry ghost month because like the last thing you need is a hangover during ghost month.
I'm trying to do no scream ghost month. Last year during ghost month, I lost my voice from all the screaming and all the spooky ghosts. This year, no scream ghost month.
Were ghosts present in your childhood in South Africa? I would have thought the Isle of Man is more ghosty, actually, than South Africa.
Yeah, there was more sort of like vaguely Celtic, Gaelic superstition things on the island.
The Isle of Man gives me strong Hound of the Baskervilles energy.
Yeah, there is sometimes a thick enough fog that you can't see more than a meter in front of you. And I've driven in that. And that's terrifying. Yes, lots of sort of glens and valleys and forests. And
by the way, Hound of the Baskervilles, worst reveal, I think, of any Sherlock Holmes. It was a big dog. Terrible.
It was a big dog where they rubbed like glow-in-the-dark paste under its eyes.
Right, yeah.
I remember sulfur.
But then I just went, oh, so it was real then. It was a big dog. It was a big,
so they
scary
killed,
dog.
They got, so they really got eaten by a big dog. Yeah. Pretty scary. Yeah, that is fucking scary. So hang on. That guy's neck got bitten off by a big dog. Oh, yeah.
Good thing Sherlock Holmes solved the case and figured out it was a big dog. But everyone knew that. That was the start of the book.
We already knew the dog was dangerous because of all the deaths.
What? But did you know it was a big dog?
Did you know the dog?
Yes, that's the first thing we said when we wrote to you. We said there's a big fucking dog and it's killing everyone. And you said, I don't think it's so simple. I think you'll be embarrassed when you find out the real answer. And then you see, now you're saying it's a big dog and you want to get paid.
Yeah. Hang on. So are you saying that all you figured out is what you said originally, which is it's not a curse? Okay.
Oh yeah. And they're like, okay, hands up. We'll accept. We got a little carried away over the curse, but you'll understand we were a bit in sorts over the numerous deaths from the big dog, which you have just admitted was real.
Okay. So you think that what we're going to take from this is to be happy that his neck isn't there anymore, but not because of a curse. It's still bad, Mr. Holmes. Okay. Everyone is dead.
Sherlock Holmes turning to everyone. It seems good people, you have been had. For instead of a great hound, we've merely been dealing with a large dog.
It's the XL bully of the Baskervilles. And then Sherlock Holmes really smugly smoking his pipe saying, it's not the dog, it's the owner. Okay, Sherlock, but yeah, that's really funny. Oh, everyone's having their necks bitten off by a ghost dog. By a dog. Okay.
Okay, I'll go to bed then.
Okay, well, that's fine. Oh, you're right. I feel much better.
yeah, that's the only Sherlock Holmes where I went, oh, come on. I think Conan Doyle
kind of
got annoyed about that one. I think Conan Doyle just kind of gave up on that one at the end. I think he wrote himself into a corner there. I think he came up with the idea before he came up with the solution.
Yeah, he was sitting there, and like one day he was just sitting there taking opium or whatever in his Victorian flat and just sort of went, what if it was just a dog?
You know what?
We've all been in writers' rooms like that, Phil. What if it was just a dog? We've spent too long on this. We've got a lot of these to get through. What if it was just a dog, okay? Yeah, it's true, because normally, right, in those stories, what it would be is like, we want to ruin the reputation of Lord Baskerville by making him think the curse is real, and he'll seem mad.
Yeah.
And then because he seems mad, we'll be able to say, well, the lord of the estate, whatever, is mad, so we should pass control onto a relative, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Whereas what the mistake they made was getting a real big dog and letting it kill people. Because then anyone who's like, the curse is real, it's like, yeah, fair enough. That guy's neck is gone. You're not crazy for thinking that. A dog did kill him.
Whether or not it's a curse is a minor at this point, that people have been murdered.
They should have called in Dr. Famous.
Dr. Famous would have solved that crime in an instant.
Do you think if we DM'd Dr. Famous and said, do you have any spells that would remove the curse of a terrible hound?
That would be funny. You know, if you message him saying, like, Dr. Famous, can I need some help, and he'd be like, yeah. And then you just slowly lay out the plot of Hound of the Baskervilles. I think he would have a bloody good go at solving it.
Yeah, well, you'd say to him, look, I've been hired by an aristocratic family. They live far out of London, in the countryside on the moors. And they're having a problem with it. They think they've been cursed by a big dog. And the only living relative has been brought over from Canada. Like, really get detailed. Just all the plot points of the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yeah.
See how long it takes him to figure it out. I would. There was some superstition in South Africa. My dad's mum, who I never met, I don't think. I think she passed away before I was born. But my dad's mum would burn her hair and fingernail trimmings.
Oh, so that it couldn't be used for nefarious reasons? Right, yeah.
A lot of what we think of as non-European superstitions are actually European superstitions, like voodoo dolls.
Yeah, I think you said on this podcast that is...
Yeah, there's a lot of it's just stuff that we've forgotten. I often wonder that, where it's like, how much of, like, England especially, like, England is such a kind of, like England's been so modernized for so long that, it, very few English people know any English folk songs, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas loads of Irish people know loads of Irish folk songs. Like, that stereotype is entirely fair. And loads of Scottish people know, like, Scottish songs or dances.
Yeah.
And I just think, I don't know. Maybe it's because England has been so relentlessly industrialized for 300 years. It's just wiped it out.
And I guess has gone through the most, what do you call it? Ethnic churn? The most.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's got by far the most ethnic churn. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, 90% of the UK's diverseness is just England. Easily, right. And even then, not all of England. It's city based, really. But yeah, I think that's
it's interesting because I think like the voodoo and stuff. A lot of English words, old English words, have had to hibernate in America to survive. Words like candy. That's an old
faucet.
English word. Faucet and turnpike.
Yeah,
turnpike. Which that's why you hear songs about the New Jersey Turnpike, and you go, "What the fuck?" I thought it's like a big turn in the road. It's like, how important is this one turn in the road that people sing about the New Jersey Turnpike? But it means motorway. But it's the old English word for motorway. And I was struck yesterday because I went to Turnpike Lane, the station.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh fuck, Turnpike!" Yeah,
it used to be that it was like a kind of pike, like a pole. And you had to pay for someone to let you on their bit of good road.
Right, yeah. So it's a toll station, basically.
Yeah.
Turnpike.
Yeah, exactly. That's going back to like early 17, well, maybe even earlier. Old word. It'd be very funny if Bruce Springsteen sang about other old-fashioned English things. and I smashed up the spinning Jenny. Like old, like 1700s machines. Canal boats and things.
Yeah.
Come on, Bruce.
Yeah, it's funny how that sort of thing has to go away to stay intact. And we make fun of Americans for saying candy. Like, that's a modern thing, but it's old English.
I think maybe English folk songs are just like the Beatles now. It's just like, that's what that is now. Wait, no one remembers, like, and I sing the song of Henry the
English,
Farmer.
Oh, English folk songs.
Like, yeah, I'm saying.
All right.
Do you think...
Yeah,
you
English
think,
folk songs. Yeah.
England can just say, well, we don't remember any of the folk songs because we had all of the music from the 60s to deal with.
It's sort of ironic. The closest thing we have to an English folk song now is Sweet Caroline, which isn't even English.
No, I don't know why that song's been chosen to be so everywhere. I guess you know what English folk songs, a lot of English folk songs are just Anglican hymns.
Yeah, we'll always have the hymns, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll always have them.
If only preserved
Green Sleeves,
by
that's kind
chance.
Of well known.
Yeah, that's a sort of ringtone level.
Yeah. But you're right. Other than that, no idea. You have to go to like Cornwall or at very least like Glastonbury area of West England to
hear. You have to go pretty rural. And even then, like, it's the only people who ever know anything about that stuff are like nerds, like me. Whereas you can go to like you can talk to quite a rowdy kind of cool guy in Ireland, and they seem to have like at least a couple of songs under their belt.
Yeah.
But then I guess lots of people know hymns, but the hymns aren't very cool, and the Irish songs often are quite cool, Phil.
Well, I think it also coincides with countries where nationalism is culturally encouraged as opposed to culturally abhorred. And, you know, nationalism in England is culturally abhorred, but culturally encouraged in Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. And so the folk culture and folk songs are able to ride on that.
That's true. That's a very, very good point. If nationalism is cuddly where you're from, then you're going to know a lot of local history.
That's it.
No one I know is more uncomfortable with England than like middle class English people. They're so freaked out by it.
Yes.
It's quite weird.
I think
I mean, it's better than rabid nationalism, but still, there's got to be a middle ground here, guys.
Yes, come on. Come on,
guys.
Which country do you think has it spot on exactly right? Balance between sort of national shame and national pride?
I think the Celtic nations have enough shame. I think they have lots of pride.
They have lots of pride.
I think if Wales had 10% more shame, 5% more shame, I think they'd have a really good balance.
France, I think, is too much pride. I think too much pride, France.
Yeah. Maybe
too much
Germany. Germany has a lot of shame.
Sorry?
Germany's the most ashamed country.
Yeah, exactly. Germany's the opposite end. Well, I'm not going to say Germany has too much shame.
No.
But the currently, the predominant culture is shame.
Japan could use a bit more shame. Again, another chunk of shame for Japan, please.
Yeah. I mean, Japan, I guess that's corollary to Germany.
You know, South Africa is pretty, not a bad balance.
Yeah.
It's just that it's not going well.
Right. Yeah.
But their balance is okay. It's changing. It's shifting. It's moving. I don't know.
Australia, New Zealand.
It depends.
I think Canada has a decent balance.
Yeah, but we only meet the hippies from those countries.
Yeah, I mean, just sort of.
We meet all the cool comedians who come over from Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. And they've got all nice opinions about things. People forget, like, the middle of Canada is like Trump country. Like, it's full on nuts.
Yeah, well, this is it. But then overall, is it balanced?
Maybe.
America,
I don't know.
Too much pride, too much shame. I think, again, it's a similar thing. It's like,
it depends where. Very few places are very balanced. Maybe the key is to find somewhere that's not that proud of itself and hasn't really got much to be ashamed of either, like Denmark.
Right, okay.
So it's less, the two numbers of shame and pride are much closer together because there's not much, they're very low numbers.
But the Scandinavian countries do get too much of this, like, to get too much compliments as like these perfect countries when they actually have pretty strong far right groups.
Well, Sweden doesn't have enough shame over its neo-Nazi stuff and collaboration during the war, maybe. Norway's pretty good.
Norway, okay.
They had a big resistance. They fought more than Denmark did. I mean, they were slightly
further away.
Maybe Norway
appears to have the right amount of shame for us.
Yeah, because they haven't really done anything shameful, and they're neutral. Yeah. Maybe that's the key.
Maybe it's Norway.
Yeah.
I was thinking Italy, but then I think Italy has gotten away with a lot historically.
Italy has gotten away with a lot. I mean, there's I don't know if she's still a senator, but there's a senator who's literally just Mussolini's granddaughter.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
So there was an election in Italy at some point where people literally said, "I'm thinking of voting for Mussolini." Which is crazy to say.
Yeah.
I remember there was a Twitter account. There was a Twitter account where someone would just keep tweeting Senator Mussolini with pictures of dead Mussolini.
Oh, at her account.
Yeah, and she kept being like, "This is very insensitive and rude." It's like, "You're Mussolini." You have to, I know the sins of the father are not the sins of the son, but you also are a far right politician. You have to at least change the name.
Yeah. Either change the politics or change the name. You got to pick one.
You can't be elected as a UKIP MP with the name Andrew Hitler. Or a BNP.
Yeah, if your name's Andrew Hitler, you need to be the most peace-loving fucking guy out there.
Be like the nicest Hitler. If your name's Andrew Hitler, you need to be like sandals and cheerful. Well, no, because then you seem a bit.
That's like something you say about someone who's like nice, but not that nice. You go, well, he's the nicest Hitler.
Someone who's the nicest one of a group of cunts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
He's the nicest Hitler. That's all he is.
This is a question. There are people out there still with the surname Hitler. Did they all just change their names?
Some did, yeah. But there's still... I think there are still some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, that must be rough. If you're just like a normal Hitler far away from Austria, far away from Germany, and you're like, oh, you're fucking kidding me.
Impossible to shop online.
Yeah.
Every company's going to be like, oh, sure, we're going to deliver to you, Mr. Hitler. Thanks.
All right, like, Johnny Hitler, if that is your real name.
Yeah, how would you get a bank account? The bank would be like, well, no, this can't be real. And you'd have to be like, look, it's going to take all day, but I have my birth certificate on me at all times. I have my family tree on me at all times. Wasn't there a guy online saying, like, his name is Hitler, and he's like, why should I give it up? Genuinely, an American guy. He kept calling it a conversation starter, and you're like, well, yeah, I mean, that's undeniable. It's as much of a conversation starter as if you had an arrow in your head. And we're just
walking around.
Why should
I remove the arrow? It gets people talking.
Maybe you should remove the arrow of judgment from your head. Okay. Maybe you should think about your invisible arrows of prejudice.
Speaking of prejudice, we should read some VIPCO quickly before. Yeah. I think we've got a couple of minutes.
I'm not sure if I've said this before. I think I have, but it's Yaroslav.
Yaroslav!
Our Polish.
Always happy to hear from Yaroslav.
So he sent us some Polish clickbait, and the caption of the news story that you click on is Russia launches a plane with a missile at Poland, and then the picture is a roast chicken. We may have said that before, but it bears repeating because it's mental. So Yaroslav says, hello, Pierre, Phil, and Blen.
Blen.
When we had Blen Moore on as the guest host.
Oh, okay.
I had my first certified moment of screaming at a podcast during your conversation about The Mask. It actually is based on a comic book, and the gritty, ultraviolet version you envisioned is actually what happens in the original story. The original The Mask, a.k.a. Big Head, is basically an evil proto-Deadpool.
Oh.
That sounds pretty cool.
The Mask comic book. Oh, look at this.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, that makes sense. Deadhead. The best-selling comic trilogy that inspired the blockbuster film The Mask. Oh. That's cool.
Well, thank you, Yaroslav. We're going to check that out because we're a couple of fucking nerds.
Dweebs over here.
My Soho Theatre run is in March and April. So come and see that if you like me telling jokes in a room.
And who wouldn't? Mm. Not many people do that better than Pierre.
Yeah.
I've got two final shows of this long world tour. Northampton on the 20th. The London Hammersmith Apollo on the 23rd. Yeah. If you're in Northampton or London, come to them.
All right. Thank you for being correspondents. Thank you for being patrons, guys. We appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, much love
to you.
Thank you
in our prayers.
Yeah, always, every day. Much
we'll
love.
We'll cast gratitude spells with Dr. Famous for you.
Dr. Famous wishes you all the best with his happiness spells and love spells. We will now cast the see you next week spell. Azazah! Bye.
Bye.